You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Good afternoon. Reporting remotely for WFHB, this is Benedict Jones.
And I'm Alex Dieterer. This is the WFHB local news for Tuesday, October 6th, 2020.
And I was out here bright and early because I think April is the best candidate.
Later in the program, Indiana begins early voting today. WFHB correspondent Aaron Comforty talks to voters who are getting ready to cast their ballots before Election Day.
And it's been every Wednesday with just a couple exceptions.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Artbeat, a weekly program interviewing artists, activists, and educators about their work. Today, Dr. Phyllis Chichek talks to Dina Al-Safar about the Violin Against Violence vigil held every Wednesday at the Monroe County Courthouse. But first, your local headlines.
Up first, here are three local headlines you need to know today. WFHB correspondent Jake Jacobson files today's local news brief.
From WFHB, this is the local news brief for Tuesday, October 6th. I'm Jake Jacobson. 990 new cases of COVID-19 were reported in Indiana on Monday, according to the Indiana State Department of Health. There were 30 new reported deaths. Locally, Monroe County saw 24 new confirmed cases yesterday. Keep in mind, Indiana University releases its COVID test results on Wednesdays. Lawrence County reported 5 new cases, while Brown County reported 1. The city of Bloomington will be hosting its third public meeting discussing the redevelopment of the old IU Health Hospital site tonight. The city bought the 24-acre site in 2018. While construction of the new IU Health campus was beginning on State Road 46. Attendees will be able to participate in discussions on three topics about the refined plan: access plus connections, open space, and land use plus neighborhood character. Tonight's meeting will serve as another opportunity for community feedback. Another public meeting is planned for December, where a finalized plan will be presented. The forum will be live-streamed starting at 6 p.m. tonight on the City of Bloomington's Facebook page and on catstv.net. Early voting has begun in Indiana. The deadline to register for voting has passed, but Hoosiers can still request a mail-in ballot until October 22nd. Bloomington residents can find more information on absentee voting and early voting locations and times at monroecountyvoters.us. Brown County residents can find voting resources online at browncountylibrary.info/voting-resources. Lawrence County residents can find this information at lawrencecounty.in.gov/government/voter-registration. That's all for your local news brief. From WFHB, I'm Jake Jacobson.
A national hotel lobbying group said two-thirds of Indiana's hotels could face permanent closure due to the coronavirus pandemic. The American Hotel and Lodging Association released a state-by-state breakdown of estimated hotel closures and job loss if Congress fails to pass another stimulus bill. It estimated that almost 700 of Indiana's 1,042 hotels could permanently close. Chip Rogers, president and CEO of AHLA, said, quote, "It's time to put politics aside and prioritize American workers in the hardest-hit industries," end quote. In a webinar on recovery for the hotel industry, Roger said hotels struggled since the beginning of the pandemic.
But as we started this pandemic, way back at the end of February, keep in mind kind of where we were mentally as an industry. We were wondering, how long was this going to last? If you recall, you probably had some discussions yourself, and some of the suggestions centered on, hey, why don't we just shut down the economy for 2 weeks? It'll all go away and then we'll reopen again. And everyone was bemoaning the fact that we would all lose 2 weeks of revenue. If only we had been so lucky, because obviously this has changed considerably since the latter stages of February when we first started working on it. Now at AHLA, everything we focused on since this has begun back in February has been all around coronavirus. We were the first industry out there, along with the airlines and the restaurants, to really talk about the impact it was having on our industry, on hoteliers specifically, and hotel employees. We continue to talk about that because, unfortunately, we were the first hit, the worst hit, and we'll be the last to recover.
According to the breakdown by AHLA, Indiana started off with almost 30,000 jobs before the pandemic. In the month of September alone, the state lost 9,517 jobs. Rogers said the industry needs to unite and urge Congress to pass another COVID-19 stimulus bill. AHLA generated over 143,000 letters to Congress. Rogers said this is the most effective strategy to reach congressional leaders.
When we as an industry are able to speak with one united voice, and we're able to speak to one set of suggestions that we have, or one set of priorities that we have, our message stands a much, much better chance of being recognized and perhaps implemented by policymakers. If we're speaking with multiple voices, and we're not being succinct and clear and united in our message, it is going to get lost, because there's a lot of people out there wanting to talk to members of Congress, wanting to talk to the administration to try to get some assistance. And if we get lost in that shuffle, we'll get nothing out of it. Fortunately, we've been able to be very clear. And this, as we pointed out here, with 143,000 letters, that all came through Hotels Act, which is on our website. It's free. You'll hear me talk more about that. But that is the single best way anyone in our industry can help us communicate with that unified voice to members of Congress.
According to NPR, the hospitality industry may not return to pre-pandemic strength until 2023.
The city of Bloomington will hold the third public forum of the master planning process for the redevelopment of the current Indiana University Health Bloomington Hospital site, according to a city press release. The virtual forum will be held today on Zoom. The city purchased the 24-acre land from IU Health in 2018 to pursue new development in support of, quote, affordable housing, sustainable development, equity, and inclusion, end quote. Bloomington Deputy Mayor Mick Renizen said public engagement has been welcomed throughout the development process.
Well, we've had a great amount of public input in our first two forums, and even in between those forums, we've had surveys that have been open to the public to look at a variety of options for how the site might redevelop after the IU Health Bloomington Hospital infrastructure moves to the east side of our community sometime late in 2021.
In tonight's meeting, master plan consultants will present a refined site plan from input at the previous two forums and multiple surveys. Renizen said the interactive plans should create a public realm in which the community wants to interact. He mentioned the current site footprint would support green space, commercial, and living area.
It's really a site we think that can support some commercial and retail, and the master planners will share what they believe the right amount of square footage for that, how much of the footprint will be occupied by something along those lines, both multifamily and single family housing. And a lot of that should be workforce and affordable, but some of it's going to be market rate. Multifamily obviously is apartments. How high should they be? How many of those should be on the site? That's a discussion topic. How many single family homes or townhomes or other things that can be owner occupied? Overall, it looks like about 1,000 dwelling units can be supported on the site. That's a pretty big number. It puts a dent in our housing study numbers. Just a dent, though. There's still going to be more need. Green space and public spaces, or the public realm, is also part of this. How much should be dedicated to those elements, knowing that there are a lot of parks and the Beeline Trail in a nearby area? How do we connect to those and draw people from those assets into this new development?
Renizen said meeting information and the link to join the forum can be found online. He suggested pre-registration for the meeting to gain early access to documents. However, attendees can join the meeting at any time.
BloomingtonHospitalSite.com is our website, and that's where you can actually sign up to be on the Zoom call, where you can register in advance. So we urge people to do that. You'll find the Zoom link on that hospital, BloomingtonHospitalSite.com website as well. And documents that if you want to see before the meeting will be shared are available if you register in advance so that you can take a look at them. This information is intense with a lot of different things to look at. It can be a bit overwhelming when you're participating on Zoom and looking at it in real time. So if folks want to see it in advance of the meeting, they can go to BloomingtonHospitalSite.com and register and get that information sent to them in advance.
The meeting will begin tonight on Zoom at 6 p.m.
The Bloomington Redevelopment Commission discussed a change order for the construction of Winslow Henderson Road improvements. Project manager Matt Smethurst said additional work caused the project to go over budget. He spoke during their October 5th meeting.
On four of the six overruns, the city requested additional work, which resulted in the overruns. And then we also had two underruns on some stairs and a railing that we were unable to install because of site conditions. This change order would result in an increase to the contract of $27,777.
Smether said additional work included sidewalk replacement, curb installation, additional retaining wall, and eight pedestrian push buttons at the intersection. He mentioned utility obstruction prevented the originally planned construction of stairs.
Those tied the path into a parking lot at the IU Credit Union. And because of some utilities that were in the way there and also the grades that didn't match up to what they were supposed to be, we were unable to put the stairs where they were planned to go. We looked at some alternate locations, but the credit union didn't like those locations. And in the end, they decided that they would be okay without having the stairs there. So their parking lot is still linked to their building. There's just not a direct link from their parking lot to the side path.
Commissioner Don Griffin expressed disappointment in the project exceeding the budgeted amount. City Controller Jeff Underwood said allowances are approved in advance to pay for any project overrun. Commissioners unanimously approved the change order.
Up next, WFHB correspondent Jasmine White reports on Indiana University's decision to rename campus buildings that honored former IU president David Starr Jordan. We return to Jasmine White for more.
On Friday, it was announced that IU Board of Trustees agreed to remove former Vice President David Starr Jordan from campus sites. Places that will be renamed are places to which might be the most familiar on campus. The places going to be renamed are Jordan Hall, Jordan Parking Garage, Jordan River, and part of North Jordan Avenue. These sites will be renamed to Biology Building, East Parking Garage, and Campus River. There is no announcement of what the suggested name is going to be for North Jordan Avenue. The IU community and current IU President McRobbie said that they begin to wonder if Mr. David Starr Jordan shared the same values as IU. President McRobbie requested the review of these named sites in June in response to students and officials who called for this specific change, President McRobbie stated in the meeting.
At your June meeting, I also highlighted particular concerns that had been expressed in the university community and elsewhere about namings on the Bloomington campus related to David Starr Jordan, who served as IU's seventh president from 1885 to 1891 and as professor of zoology from 1875 to 1885. In response to this, I established a committee of six distinguished senior IU faculty members with additional support to evaluate these namings. This committee's charge was to review the structures and spaces named for Jordan on the Bloomington campus: Jordan Hall, Jordan Avenue, Jordan River, and the Jordan Parking Garage, pursuant to the university's institutional naming policy, and then to provide a report to me, Provost Lorna Bell, and the naming committee with recommendations on whether the university should remove or keep using the Jordan name on these sites.
He shared a letter from faculty in the biology department and students' petitions. The board voted 8-1 on renaming existing structures after David Starr Jordan, a prominent figure in the American eugenics movement in the early 20th century.
As the report makes clear, David Starr Jordan was a complex and complicated figure who was influential in higher education nationally and, of course, here at IU. He was a highly influential American ichthyologist in the 19th and early 20th centuries. As a faculty member at IU, he led one of the earliest, if not the very first, study abroad programs of any American university. As a forward-looking president of IU, he oversaw the university's move to the new campus at Dunn's Woods in 1885, secured state funding to start the build-out of the campus, instituted the then revolutionary concept of curricular majors and electives, and emphasized the central importance of experimentation and research. He went on, of course, to serve as the first president of Stanford University. But Jordan was also at the forefront of the American eugenics movement. And some of the beliefs he espoused in his writings especially those concerning people you regard it as unworthy or undesirable, make for extremely troubling reading. Jordan promoted a branch of eugenics or eugenic thought known as negative eugenics, which later sought, through marriage laws, forced sterilization practices, and immigration controls, to prevent breeding among those deemed to be of unfit stock. And he was enormously influential in this movement. One scholar who advised the review committee suggested that Jordan may have been among the top 20 most influential global leaders of this movement. The Nazis acknowledged the influence of American eugenic thought on their racial theories, theories that led directly to the Holocaust. Jordan chaired the first eugenics organization in the United States and was a founding member and a trustee of the Human Betterment Foundation, an organization devoted entirely to the promotion of forced sterilization legislation. Indiana, in fact, became the first state to enact forced sterilization legislation in 1907, and 30 states followed suit. Approximately 2,500 individuals in Indiana state custody were subjected to forced sterilizations in subsequent years. Indiana sterilization laws were only repealed by Governor Otis Bowen in 1974.
For WFHB, I'm Jasmine White.
Today marks the first day for early voting for Hoosiers. WFHB correspondent Aaron Comforty talked to voters who are ready to cast their ballots before Election Day.
I spoke with a couple candidates and a volunteer outside of Monroe County's only early polling station this afternoon. There were between 60 and 70 people lined up outside of the election office on 7th and Madison. The line to vote stretched all the way down the block and around the corner. I spoke first with Kathy Crabtree, a volunteer for school board candidate April Hennessy. You'll hear we spoke outside the busy polling station wearing masks.
And I was out here bright and early because I think April is the best candidate. She was a high school teacher and she's a mom. She's super smart and passionate. Remember to flip the ballot over to vote for school board.
Sometimes ballots are only filled out on one side. That's what Crabtree was referring to when she said make sure to flip the ballot over. Next, I spoke with Kara Crothy, a candidate for Monroe Circuit Court Division 8.
Hi, I'm Kara Crothy. I'm running for Monroe Circuit Court Judge Division 8, and I've been a public defender for 16 years. And I'm interested in keeping some of the progressive programs we have here in Monroe County and expanding on those and finding alternatives to incarceration for people, especially for nonviolent felonies and nonviolent misdemeanor crimes.
What are some of those alternatives to incarceration for nonviolent felonies and crimes that come to mind?
Well, I'm on the problem-solving courts here in Monroe County, which is drug treatment court, mental health court, and reentry court. And they use evidence-based practices. It's a two-year program. People come in and they get case management and they have to be in treatment. Because the idea is that people are coming into the system because of their mental health issue they're having or substance abuse disorder. And so that if you treat the issue, they're less likely to come back into the system.
And the last person I spoke with was Jeff Bradley, a candidate for Monroe County Circuit Court Judge.
So most of my career has been in public service. And for me, it's just an opportunity to find different ways to keep our court system getting better. So one of the things you look at right now is access. And really one of the bigger challenges with COVID, and we've seen it in our school systems and in our court systems, is do people have the same resources and same opportunities, you know, to Zoom in the court, to utilize electronic means, and so that folks don't get left behind. So even though we're coming up with a lot of great innovations, you want to make sure that you're providing a court system that everyone has a chance to have access to it and have opportunities within the system. So that's one of many things that you're always looking for and concerned about.
Now, the early voting station is only open on select days between now and the general election day, so make sure to check the Monroe County voter registration webpage before you go in and vote. The other thing to be aware of is that the time waiting in line to vote can be upwards of an hour, according to one person who had just come out of the polling station. Some employers are giving their workers time off to vote, while others aren't. An email that Indiana University sent to its staff last week noted that it is just providing voting time off to certain employees, citing that the polls open up as early as 6 a.m. and that if employees want to vote, they can get up early before their shifts start. At the early voting polling station in downtown Bloomington, I'm Aaron Comforti for WFHB.
Now it's time for Artbeat, your weekly segment highlighting local artists and their work. Today, Dr. Feliz Cicek talked to Dina El-Safar about the Violin Against Violence Vigil.
Welcome to Artbeat with Dr. Feliz Cicek at WFHB. Today, I welcome Dina El-Safar to Artbeat via Zoom. Welcome, Dina.
Thank you so much.
You have just completed the Lotus Music Festival virtually. How did that go?
Oh, it was actually really wonderful. They did such a good job. I think, as far as I've heard from everybody, that the live stream was pretty clear, not glitchy or some of the other things that tend to happen in live streams these days. But I don't know. I didn't watch it.
I remember talking to Kathleen earlier, and they were running into some problems, but it was a few months ago, so they probably figured out how to do it by now.
That's the thing. They had a sort of a team of tech people that were helping to make that go as smoothly as possible, and that's something that a lot of live stream events not have, is a tech person that making sure everything.
Part of the reason I'm asking that you weren't very keen on doing virtual or online events, do you feel like it's a compromise, or do you find other joys in doing?
Well, at the beginning, I guess I was pretty skeptical about, you know, wow, what a sad replacement. However, considering what's going on for everybody, the first time I did a live stream concert was in April. And what I loved about it was afterwards, I saw there was a ton of like little comments in the chat, people watching from East Coast, West Coast, even in different countries. And I thought, well, that's kind of magical. Okay. So in the moment, you don't get all the audience response. But then afterwards, to see like, oh, this person watched and that person watched. How magical. So there's kind of a delayed gratification in it.
Do you have a bigger audience in a way, bigger outreach? But you are doing a live event nonetheless every Wednesday?
Every Wednesday, you know, weather permitting, etc. The first one was July 1st. And that was going to just be a one-time thing. But then we were so inspired by July 1st and how it went that we just kept it going. And it's been every Wednesday with just a couple exceptions since then. So it's called Violins Over Violence. And of course, a lot of people chuckle when they hear that. If you lived in the U.S. or if you ever watched Saturday Night Live back in the 1970s and 80s, Gilda Radner had a character and she would always be confused about violins and saying like, I don't like violence. What is this? Violent, you know, so it's the word sounds similar. So it's a kind of a funny joke in a way, but it's also very appropriate for this time. What happened was there was something called a violin vigil taking place in Aurora, Colorado, and it was in response to a police killing of Elijah McClain, who was a young African-American man living in Colorado, who we found out about his life and his personality after he died. It was very heartbreaking because he was a violinist and just such a sensitive, tender fellow, like a really just nothing but kind is sort of the impression I got of this particular person. And because he was a violinist in Aurora, Colorado, at the end of June, a bunch of musicians got together to have a vigil for Elijah McClain. And this was shortly after, you know, the killing of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and all these other names that were coming to the forefront. And when I heard about Elijah McClain, it was like someone had called my number, like, because he's a violinist. And then the next thing that happened in Aurora when they, you know, I don't know if it was 30 musicians, they got together to perform a violin vigil in Elijah McClain's honor, and they got shut down by police. And I was like, wait a minute, what? All they were doing was playing music, and it was this beautiful thing, and they got treated like that. It was infuriating to me. And I felt like now my number has been called twice. In fact, Bloomington wasn't the only spot. All around the country, maybe around the world, violin vigils started happening in response to what they did in Aurora. To that original violin vigil. So there was things in California, in New York, in Chicago. And I said, Bloomington needs to be on this map. I know summer, it's summer. We don't have all the music students here. So there's not the big music presence that we normally have. So I'm going to take it on my shoulder. And I reached out to one of the musicians I work with a lot. Her name is Gloria Bruner. She's a fantastic violinist. And we work together a lot. And so I said, hey, Gloria, will you join me in this violin vigil? She says, yes, like without me even explaining anymore. So she and I have been doing it together ever since. We did the first one at Sample Gate because they were mowing the grass at the courthouse. But she, Gloria, actually was the one that really felt like, no, we should do it at the courthouse. So that every single week since then, it's been at the courthouse. And the main reason was to sort of create some kind of balm, because the courthouse has been a focal point, a central location for a lot of activity this summer. So on June 5th, there was an incredible Black Lives Matter march. It was one of the biggest gatherings ever in Bloomington, and it was peaceful and it was powerful. But then after that, there was some less than peaceful things that have happened. There was someone came and drove their car through some peaceful protesters and injured a couple people here in Bloomington. And then in the subsequent week, there were people coming through Bloomington. I don't even think they're from here, but being very, very loud and provocative. And they're, revving their engines and belching out diesel smoke and just intentionally trying to sort of upset the people here in Bloomington. And I don't like to engage in direct conflict. That's not what I was put on this earth for. I feel I'm here to add beauty and music, and Gloria feels the same. So what we do is every Wednesday we come and putting the beauty and the peace and love back into the air, back into the courthouse. We're just basically want to just make beautiful music and make people feel peaceful and remind all of Bloomington, like, what is so great about Bloomington? Why do we live here? Why do we love this community? I think we are doing something that is almost like Bloomington asked us to do it. Like, I feel I'm just representing Bloomington when I do violence over violence.
Do you want people to come join you with safe social distancing, or do you feel like this is something you and Gloria want to do, just the two of you?
We love it when people stop and listen or intentionally come to see us. And in fact, the last week we even had the addition of a dancer, one of our friends, Angel. She came and danced. And we were thinking, well, yeah, she wanted to, but also it was, the week leading up to Lotus. We thought, why don't we take it to the next level? We'll have not only music, but dance. And really, it is certainly open to audience, although we're not like advertising in the way I would normally ask, because it's also kind of like this sort of magical in the moment feeling, and we're amplified. So people sometimes will walk up to us and say, five blocks away.
Let's take a listen to a sample from one of your vigils. Thank you for coming on to the program again. And let's remind our listeners that you are at the courthouse every Wednesday.
That's correct. And weather permitting, it's 11 in the morning.
If you want to join at a safe distance, Dina and Gloria will be holding a vigil with their violins against violence. Thank you again,
Dina.
Thank
you so much. I really appreciate getting to talk about this with you.
You have been listening to ArtBeat with Dr. Phyllis Cicek on WFHB. ArtBeat is produced in partnership with the Arts Alliance of Greater Bloomington. Tune in on Tuesdays on WFHB after 7:50 in the morning and again during the daily local news at 5 p.m. Or you can listen online at wfhb.org.
You've been listening to the WFHB Local News. Today's headlines were written by Jake Jacobson, Aaron Comforti, Jasmine White, Cade Young, and Sydney Forman in partnership with CATS, Community Access Television Services.
Our feature was produced by Phyllis Cicek. Our theme music is provided by Mark Bingham and the Social Climbers. Engineer and executive producer is Cade Young. For WFHB, I'm Alex Dieterer.
And I'm Benedict Jones. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered listener-supported, independent, local news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming, online at WFHB.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@WFHB.org.
Stay tuned for Planetary Radio, coming up next on WFHB.